Thank you, Brenda. Good morning. My name is Kevin Armstrong. I'm an agronomist working with my colleague Larry Hendrickson at the John Deere Technology Innovation Center in Champaign, Illinois. I'd like to also acknowledge Tom Mueller and Sue Gray as an agronomist working for John Deere. We work as a team on developing solutions both for our customers and also for internal facing programs. This presentation that we'll show today is a collaboration between both John Deere and the USDA ARS, and I'd like to first acknowledge our co-authors. First is Brian Weinhold, a soil scientist at the USDA in Lincoln, Nebraska. Brian and his team are responsible for, I'd say, a lot of the heavy lifting for this work in terms of sample collection, data analysis, and also interpretation. And also I'd like to acknowledge Ren Clark of Delta Data Systems in Picayune, Mississippi, for help with data management and also data analysis. The title of our talk is Influence of Local Topography on Precision Irrigation Management. So I think the best thing to do to begin with is to define what do we mean by that. In terms of redistribution and to site characteristics, first we think about it as rainfall and irrigation rates exceeding soil infiltration. Then they move to local lows, right? This is what we define as redistribution. We have a term called LSP. It stands for landscape position. It's somewhat creative in its naming, but it just defines this redistribution across the landscape. If you notice the graphs on the bottom, what you see is on the bottom left to your left is landscape position colorized. So the red areas would be the high ridge areas in a field. The blue areas would be the low-lying areas on a field, okay? And what you see consistently for this example field, I'll show you it's in western Nebraska, that corn yield relates very well to these differences that we see fairly across time. This is an example of 3 years compared to, I think we have about 8 years in our current database. But you see typically it's about 5 to 6 megagrams per hectare swing from top to bottom or greater than 50 bushels per acre. So based on that, one of the current paradigms for precision irrigation and I would say for management is layering different spatial layers on top of one another, right? And in terms of irrigation, the top ones usually include topography, electrical conductivity, soil type, and crop yield for as many years as you've got it. And what you do is you layer it and you come up with a prescription map. One of the questions that we'd like to ask here is that not only how do they layer, but what are the roles of each of these in describing both yield and plant available water variability? Since this talks on topography, I'll focus on what the relative role of topography is in that mix. To me, this also speaks to how does this impact our understanding of soil moisture probe placement. So the probe you see here is one of our probes. It's called Field Connect. I'll explain that a little bit later, but you can see what are implications if you have one probe and you place it on the high ridge area of a field, if you place it in the low, if you place it in the middle, or what if you place it according to EC, what are the implications of those sorts of decisions on management? To understand this a little bit better, our group developed a collaborative project, again, between Deere and the USDA ARS. It was in western Nebraska. You can see where it is with the star out there. That we worked on 3 different fields out in western Nebraska. Brian and team helped take soil cores up to 40 per field down to 120 centimeters deep. These were segmented into different depth segments as well, but I'll only present the full core results and modeling a little bit later. Texture was taken from these cores as well as PAW was calculated. That's plant available water, which is obviously the water that would be available to the plant. And also we put in Field Connect systems. These are these moisture probes measuring moisture down to 100 centimeters. They have 5 capacitance sensors on them that measure soil moisture continuously every day, and it's wirelessly transferred to our website. Indirect measurements were also added in the database. That's EC, landscape position, elevation, soil type, and crop yield for the years that we have it. Took all of that, put that into a database, worked on crunching that. The display I have on the bottom shows you exactly where we took these cores and placed these Field Connect systems. What's interesting is that soil cores were not randomly taken, I would say, or grid soil sampled. We chose the soil core locations to maximize the variability of EC and LSP. So if you have a low EC zone, you usually have different landscape. It's not consistently landscape all the way through. So take a core, low EC of high, and low LSP, right? So try to maximize that variability that the models are seeing as you go along. And that consequently takes corn yield into effect as well. Notice that these field connect systems, the black triangles, they're not random either. They're in a line on this one field. The reason they're a line is because we wanted to understand how does landscape position affect our soil moisture readings. So if this line literally goes at a low line area, up a hill, back down the hill. We've got a probe at each spot going all the way across that hill to understand it better. And what we see from that, let me flip this over, is pretty substantial differences in soil moisture readings, kind of as expected from these probes, depending on where they're placed on the landscape. These are two different fields to begin with. Both fields are planted in wheat, and we monitored the fields from the last fall all the way through July when the wheat was harvested. Notice on the bottom, I tried to present some sort of a way that you can understand. I color-coded the different spots with the graph as well so you can understand where on the landscape they're coming from. But fairly different readings as we go across the landscape. So you see on the starting on the left, you can see we placed them in October. We had different soil moisture readings even early on as after harvest before. You can see the freezing. That's the pattern you see going down as winter comes in, thawing back out, and then you start to see these perturbations due to irrigation and rainfall events on these fields, which have different implications depending on what irrigation management you're working on. So the next question is asked is, well, what causes these differences in field connect readings? And what we see is that a lot of these differences are due to soil characteristics as well as perhaps surface redistribution across time. If starting on your left, these are two graphs that are meant to show how is soil texture characterized with both landscape groupings and EC groupings. Okay, so if you look on the bottom part of the left graph, you see something called LSP. It says low, middle, high. That means I took the range of LSP and I broke it up into a low, middle, and high segment, a grouping. Within that grouping, I have depth for each of the 30 centimeters, and within each of that, I have the textural variability. Take home away from this is that percentage of clay and silt increases as landscape goes down, right? You see about almost a 20% swing in additive clay and silt as you go from the high ridge areas of the field to the low-lying areas. You look at EC, same graph, but now EC is the grouping variable. You see similar variability that the higher clay and higher silt at the higher EC, but not quite the same distinction as what landscape position is telling us. So we're describing the variability perhaps more stringently with using the landscape variable. We can take this textural data, convert it to plant available water, and not surprisingly, we see a very similar trend because it's a calculation. So you look on the left, again, using low, middle, high landscape variables, you see that the plant available water is about 25 millimeters. It's in volumetric, going down all the way to 10, on going by depth on these higher landscape position areas. You look at EC, you see some variability, but really not quite as great as what this landscape is telling us across this one field. That tells us kind of a snapshot view of what we're seeing. Next, I want to get into a little more modeling work, is what is the contributions of landscape when it comes to modeling. So this is what I call calibration samples. To the audience, that means that this is N equals 40. These are 40 cores on one field is my sample size that I'm using. So that's my calibration data set. And what you can do is if you take those cores, you can link it to yield values. The Y variable here would be yield equals PAW, my surrogate for soil texture, EC, landscape, and interactions. And what I'd like to know is what influence does landscape position have for describing yield variability just at the individual core level, okay? What you see is take those different terms, put those on the graph on the bottom left, and you see source is the variable names, a simplistic version of it, and you see something called type 3 SS that scares many of the stat students early on. But really what that means is variability described after everything else had a chance to take a look at it, okay? So type 3 means you see a bigger number, for instance, on the top part of that graph. You see LSP is 9858. That tells me that after PAW and EC had their chance of describing corn yield variability, LSP is still contributing a heck of a lot to describing that, even after those other spatial layers had their say. Hence, it's also significant, and that models R-squared of 50%. You take LSP out of the equation, you see the R-squared drop to about 20%, right? And then PAW, or our soil textural, starts to describe these differences more without that landscape position effect in there. The graph on the right just shows you based on the 40 cores, what that yield by landscape trend looks like. And this is just 2 years of yield to show you that we see, again, a fairly consistent relationship between 5 to 6 megagrams per hectare difference, or about greater than 50 bushel from high to low. Across years, it's about a 25% improvement in described yield variability when including landscape position in these models. So we have Y equals yield. That's the yield variable. We can flip that now and say, what if the Y variable is PAW? Okay? So now the Y variable is PAW equals EC's landscape, I threw in soil type, and the interactions. And what does that do in terms of, again, N equals 40? What you see is, take those terms, put them down on the chart below, and you see a contribution of LSP not as great as for yield, but still contribution leading to about 60% of the R-square. You take it out, you see about a 15% reduction in R-squared due to landscape position, which speaks to the fact that using these as an aggregate is a better descriptor of both yield and PAW than just soil type or something like EC alone. And this graph on the right shows you that there is a trend to PAW and also landscape position. This is my attempt to scale these results. So I said calibration results. Now I'm taking to this to the full field level. So what you can do is you can take the previous equation for PAW, make a raster out of it based on spatial characteristics. You can stack EC layers, you can stack landscape, and you can make this at whatever grid desired level that you want. So I made this a 5 meter by 5 meter, and I literally took every single 5 meter by 5 meter pixel in that field and had spatial information appended to it. What that gives you is a data set of 25,000 points and a what I like to call a directional shotgun blast, because you have all kinds of new stuff coming into the equation besides just your calibration sample course at this point. You notice there still is a general trend to landscape position and yield. There's a lot more things going on as well. But the thing I think that's most interesting is that you scale this from the calibration data set and you still see about a 25% improvement despite everything else adding more variability in there. Hence, even at the field level, we're seeing this sort of descriptive information. Conclusions, this is ongoing work, but we see substantial moisture variability across landscape positions. We see that this moisture variability is related to large yield differences consistently across years. Description of the moisture availability is greatly improved when using a combined approach, and what I mean by that is including EC soil type and adding landscape position in there as well. And also we think this has implications for refinement of precision irrigation and management considerations in the future. Again, I said it was ongoing work. We've been working with a team in western Nebraska for modeling. We've got a few more fields we're working with this year. We see that topography is consistently related to crop yields. I say all crops, all geographies, all levels of terrain, water flows downhill regardless of where it's coming from, right? So one thing we'd like to be able to get a little bit more into the equation is that we see landscape position having an effect at the soil property level. There's also the idea of surface redistribution. Moving into higher precipitation environments, which means east of West Nebraska, we start to be able to better understand how that surface flow affects some of the probe-to-probe readings as well. And we think it has great value, especially at having one probe and having that contextualize across a field and perhaps better able to model some of these precision irrigation decisions. With that, I thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions now or afterwards.
Is there one question here?
Yes. Sorry, could you say this on soil?
Organic matter?
On soil organic matter? Yes, we've... Sure. How am I taking into account soil organic matter into these equations as well? We've got soil organic matter calculated for each depth of these cores as well.
Okay.
I don't have it in the presentation we are, and you're right, it does have an effect depending on how much percent is by depth. But we do have that too. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the more...
If you try to move across and say, we don't have any data from that field, we have a yield, what do we learn?
Yeah, so we have several other fields that are adjacent to this field, the center pivot field, and they're very similar in how they describe yield variability. I think perhaps even a bigger test would be to broaden the environment out to perhaps different precipitation areas as well. But yes, I mean, if you have that, if you know what the field next to you's information is, having that contextualized for perhaps a Bayesian prior would be useful.
The reason I'm asking is a farmer couldn't afford to take all those measurements, so you've got to take what you learn in one field and move it.
That's right.
The question is what's the inference space of going heavily into a field like that and then moving across that landscape to see what you've learned? Is that sufficient to guide the management of the other fields?
Right. And I think at the moisture probe level, you're getting real-time readings to make these sorts of decisions. And I think to your question is how much contextual information can we bring to the table to take that one probe or two probe readings and then use that and move that from other fields nearby as well. And I think there is a possibility to it. I think the work's ongoing with that.
I know there are more questions, including myself, but we can, we need to move. I want to invite the next speaker.